Welcome back to Voices from the Front Lines. So we'd like to welcome Chiyoung Kim and Seung-hae Seo to the show. Chiyoung Kim is a member of Notodo for Korean Community Development in New York City and of Morphing, mobilized and organized to resist FTAs and neoliberal globalizations, a coalition of five Korean-American organizations that formed to oppose the free trade agreements being currently being negotiated between the U.S. and South Korea. He just returned from D.C., where he helped to organize a week-long protests for the first round of the negotiations. And then Seung-hae Seo, who works with the Korean Policy Institute and was also in D.C., where she helped to organize congressional press conferences and policy workshops. Welcome, Seung-hae and Chiyoung.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you. God, we got something with these acronyms. Morphing, mobilize and organize to resist FTAs and neoliberal globalization. But let's start off. Seung-hae, so we've got a $7 billion possible trade negotiations between the U.S. and Korea. And I know the Korean Policy Institute just organized a week of congressional hearings and then released the policy analysis. Can you start off by giving folks a sense of what's being negotiated and the potential impact, and the timeline? And if I understand correctly, I mean, the U.S. Forced the South Korea to have some preliminary policy changes before they even get into the negotiations, something like trying to continue to, we have to continue import, Koreans have to continue to import beef. They put some restrictions on the cars so that they can increase access for import of U.S. cars. So let's talk a little bit about that and its impact.
Sure. Well, in February, the governments of South Korea and the United States announced that they were launching talks for a proposed free trade agreement. And as you just said, the first round of face-to-face negotiations was this past week in Washington, D.C. And, from the U.S. perspective, they're saying that no one forced them to make these concessions, but in order to come to the table, it seems pretty clear that these things had to be done. In terms of what's at stake, the stakes are really huge. South Korea and the U.S. have over $70 billion of trade last year, and there's over 17 categories of negotiations. And I won't obviously have time to go through them all, but some of the really, really huge ones that people are talking about are rice, pharmaceuticals, beef, as you mentioned, and a lot of others, the autos as well.
So in terms of the rice, there's 3.5 million farmers, and as many of you guys have either followed our show or the news, 1,000 Korean farmers from the Korean Peasants League went to Hong Kong to protest the trade agreements around the WTO, and about 300 groups, also being led by the Korean the Farmers League, has actually created a united front to stop these trade agreements. So what's that, in terms of the rice, what kind of impact will it have on Korean farmers?
Well, it's just absolutely huge. I mean, as in many, many Asian countries, rice is the staple food, and it's not just, what you eat, but it's also at the heart of your culture. It's at the center of Korean society in many ways, and there's been, thousands and thousands of years of rice farming that's been going on in Korea. Now, people say that if the rice market is liberalized, that Korea's food security could plummet to 5%, meaning that Korea would only be able to feed its people at a rate of 5% with the food that it grows in its own country. And that's really, really sad, considering that Korea used to live, and Koreans used to live on the rice that was produced in the country. The interest of U.S. agribusiness, because it's let's be really clear, it's not the small family farms in the United States that seek to benefit from this FTA. In fact, the Coalition of Family Farmers is against this FTA in the United States. But it's the giant agribusiness corporations that, if the rice market is liberalized, would come in and dump very, very cheap rice, grown, selling rice for cheaper than Korean farmers can afford to grow it. And this would drive farmers off the land. And it's not, it's a devastating, devastating process for the individual farmers, but also for Korean culture as a whole. In the month of April alone, 80,000 farmers gave up on farming because it was too desperate. The situation was too desperate. And the announcement of the FTA talks is all part of that, is all part of this growing difficulty and challenge. Regularly, farmers are committing suicide in protest and in desperation at these circumstances. And almost every Korean American and Korean has relatives who in their past or now are trying to make a living through farming. So it just means a huge, it has a huge impact politically, emotionally, economically, and in every way. And once the people are driven off the land, it's forever. It's very difficult to then rebuild a farm or to rebuild a rice market once agribusiness has moved in, as has happened in many other countries.
Chiang, the recent protest that you guys engaged in D.C. Brought out, I think, close to 100 allies from 100 folks from Korea helping to lead the struggle, and then allies throughout the U.S., scores of different organizations. Give us a sense of what went on.
Well, let's see. Every day we had several events going on. Of course, some of them were symbolic marches. For example, on Wednesday, we did about a mile and a half of what's called Sambo Ilbe. It's it's taking three steps and then bowing down to the ground. It's a symbolic message of our sacrifice toward the struggle. But also, we also carried out everyday rallies at the site, at the negotiation site, which is the Office of the United States Trade Representative.
So this is the first round of negotiations. How did that went in? I read one of the newspaper articles where someone inside said that they could hear the protests from the outside. What kind of impact do you think we may have had?
Well, this is just the first round. So we had four goals this time. First was of course, was to stop the FTA process. The second goal was to let the American media know of the issue. The third goal was to let the Korean public know of the issue here. And the fourth goal was to construct solidarity between the political side and the movement sectors. And we achieved the second, third, and fourth goals, I think, very well. We made a pretty large impact on the movement sectors here. But as far as stopping the FTA, that will continue.
And if I could just add on to that, I absolutely agree with Jihyung. The coverage in the South Korean media was huge. I heard one person say, this is anecdotal, of course, I heard one person say that the coverage was 4-1 in terms of the protests versus the trade talks themselves. And
yep.
And it's had a huge impact on in the media. Everyone's, even my parents saw it. You know, everyone's talking about it. And in terms of the alliances that were forged among grassroots and more mainstream people and organizations, there were joint statements between a member of parliament from Korea and Dennis Kucinich here, AFL-CIO Change to Win, and the Korean Confederation of Trade Unions, and the FKTU, which is another Korean association, issued a joint statement. The Agriculture, Livestock, and Fishery Committee against the U.S.-Korea FTA and the National Family Farm Coalition also issued a statement, and these were all part of the events that went on this week.
One of the things I always kind of try to ask is, you know, what people in the U.S. government are actually standing up against this. So I know in your press release, you're talking about Dennis Kucinich, which you just mentioned too. What are the other people that are doing stuff, if any? And then what is Dennis Kucinich doing stuff beside, you know, in addition to actually joint statements and press conferences?
Well, this is actually just getting started because, you know, this is just the first round of negotiations right now. But because we have been able to, people have been able to take a proactive stance on this, there is hope to plan a lot more. And so a lot of these various politicians and organizations are open to talking about some of this stuff. I know that people at AFL-CIO have talked to people at the Confederation of Trade Unions in Korea about possibly joining them in Seoul for the second round. as acts of solidarity, and the same with the Family Farm Coalition. I don't think that there's been any concrete plans made or definite commitments, but the communication lines are open, and there's already been this sort of solidarity that has begun. And I know that there were legislative visits that happened last week, and a representative from the ILWU joined the Korean delegation to make these visits.
And so what's the timeline that we're talking about? When could it possibly go into effect? And so what's the timeline that we have to be able to try to impact whatever decisions are going to be made?
Well, it's hard to say, because there's, under the Trade Act of 2002, there's this kind of thing they call the fast track. And basically that would mean that Congress would not be able to have any chance to change anything or to see anything they didn't like, improve anything. They'd have to just give it an up or down vote. And in order to get it in under that fast track, it would have to be submitted to Congress by April 1st of next year, which is really, really fast. It's less than 10 months. I mean, I think the U.S.-Chile trade agreement was negotiated for over 2 years. And a lot of people think it's not going to happen in such a short time. But Congress could do other things, like extend parts of the deadline, et cetera, et cetera. So we don't really know. But I think actually it's fairly likely that they will not be able to come to an agreement by April 1st, just given the huge number of issues and things that they need to agree on.
Right. Yeah, if I can just add a little bit, there are possibly 2 points of intervention. First is putting pressure on the U.S. Congress, but as Sunya mentioned, that seems to be unlikely. But from Korea, there seems to be a little bit more room, because this timeline is entirely set by the Bush administration, by the USTR, and not by the South Korean government. In Korea, the public response is huge. There are rallies and all-night vigils constantly being held, and on June 13th, about 100,000 people are expected to gather in Seoul. So, at the other side of these talks, the Korean people are trying to pressure its own government to at least delay for now, the trade talks.
Yeah, I mean, if we look at the past any trade agreements, I mean, what's been most successful is there's fight from the inside. So when you have the Central American Trade Agreement or the South American Trade Agreement, the success was that you had folks like Venezuela step up. And the challenge here is that I understand President Roh is in support of the trade agreement. Sunya, you were going to proceed, but if you could talk a little bit about what does this mean in the context of increase with Pyeongtaek and increased militarization and expansion of the Camp Humphreys army base there, and in the context of Korean unification?
Right. Well, I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's, you know, when people talk about FTA, they usually just focus on the economic, but of course the economic is completely tied to the political and the military. And yeah, just recently there's been an ongoing struggle of farmers and civil society to resist the expansion of the base in Pyeongtaek, and there was a huge military expulsion of the people, but the people are vowing to continue to hold on to the land, especially for these farmers. You know, we just talked about farmers earlier. There's farmers in Pyeongtaek too, and this is the only land they have. A lot of them are in their 60s and 70s. They've been farming their whole life, and now they're just being physically forced off their land. A lot of them are vowing to replant rice, because that is what they're here to do. And in terms of all of this FTA, it's not just an economic thing. The opponents of the FTA have emphasized that the Korean movement that has arisen does not have any bad feelings towards the American people, but just to the American corporations and the people in government that support them. But, you know, if such a proposed FTA, if it passes, they have said that it cannot help but raise the anti-American sentiment in Korea, because this is so much tied together. And so in terms of the U.S.-Korea relationship, too, it, you know, that could also worsen the the prospects for reconciliation.
We've got 20 seconds. In 20 seconds, give folks some contact information for those who may want for those to help out in terms of putting pressure on the U.S. Congress and what they can do on this side.
Sure. Well, you could get some information at our website, kpolicy.org, and Jihyung, I'm sure, has other information.
Jihyung, what's the number for notice or contact information?
Well, we have a blog. I don't have the blog address right now, but if you type in morphing on the Internet, you can find it.
Okay, again, that's M-O-R-F-I-N-G. Thank you so much. That was Sung-Hae Seo from the Korean Policy Institute and Jihyung Kim from Notato for Korean Development. That ends today's show, Voices from the Frontlines. This is Tammy Bang Liu and Damon Azali. Thanks for joining us. Thank you to T.J. Crawford, Vijay Prashad, Sung-Hae Seo, and Jihyung Kim. Today we heard music from Common, Damian Marley, Kim Hill, and Stevie Wonder, and respects to his mother, Eula Mae Hardaway, who passed May 31st. You can listen to previous shows at www.thestrategycenter.org. We'd like to thank our producer, Alan Minsky, production assistant, Lisa Adler, engineer, Maggie LaPique, and we'll see you next week. Don't miss Susie Weissman from Beneath the Surface.